www.americaswebradio.com. You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another edition today. We welcome all of our live listeners, and we welcome those who will be listening to us later on with the downloads. And I want to welcome Ken Creighton for joining me today. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be with you.
For any of our listeners who may not have read about the show in News and Views over the last couple of weeks, Ken is going to be talking with me today about a number of topics. He is the Director of Professional Standards at RICS, RICS. And so perhaps, Ken, a good way to start would be to let our audience know a little bit about you and the organization and your role there.
Absolutely. Thank you. Well, as you said, I'm the Director of Professional Standards at RICS. And a little bit about me, some of your listeners might be expecting a British accent, but you are hearing an accent from Seattle, which is where I'm originally from. I've been with RICS for just under 3 years now, and I've been an American in London for almost 13 years. I came to RICS from the International Accounting Standards Board. Some of your listeners might be familiar with IFRS, International Financial Reporting Standards, which is essentially the accounting standards, international accounting standards. And I spent the previous 6 years there working with countries around the world that were adopting IFRS. And so I think the what we're about to talk about with international standards for our profession really relate to that, and that experience is what brought me to RICS.
So your experience is in the standards area, maybe not specifically to any particular standard. In this case, it's going to be a measurement standard, but it could be broader than that, and maybe that's a good topic to talk about in terms of the breadth of what RICS does, because as you probably know, here in the U.S., Society of Professional Surveyors deals pretty specifically with surveying issues all up and down the spectrum, but certainly, and to standards to some degree, but we don't really step outside of our realm, so to speak, so much. But
sure.
Maybe you could talk to the audience a little bit about the breadth of what RICS does.
Absolutely. Yeah, RICS is a professional body, originally based historically here in the UK. It's been around for a long time. It was set up by Queen Victoria with a royal charter many years ago, and the professionals, the members of RICS, are chartered surveyors, and the charter refers to a royal charter. And so chartered surveyors is what we call this profession. And it is a term that isn't very international. I know that where we come from in the U.S., it's not a term that's used widely for people that do all the things that members of RICS do. And to answer your good question, it's really broken down into 17 different what we call professional groups. And so we cover professionals in art and antiques, building control, building surveying, quantity surveying, commercial property valuation, all the aspects of land like geomatics. It's a wide spectrum. Fundamentally, as I would describe it, it comes down to measurement, valuation or appraisal, and doing it ethically. And so while we have members that might work with a building or art or a body of water or a boat or any of these tangible and some intangible items like business valuation, they're measuring at one level and then applying valuation to those measurements and doing it ethically. And so if I were to sum up what we're trying to do with standards is we want to have international standards for measurement and valuation and ethics, so that we can tie all this work together consistently. And then if I get back to what I said before about international financial reporting standards, in our profession, we're the ones who hand all this information off to the accountants. And we want to make sure that the data, the detail of what these things are and how they should be represented in numbers and financially as well as in other aspects are consistent as we measure and value around the world. And so we hand it off to the accountants. We can have consistency. So a lot of the work I did previously in accounting standards, that was all good work to ensure that accountants around the world did their work consistently. But this is taking it one level deeper. We are the ones that are out there touching things in the world, giving those pieces of paper to the accountants. And we need to make sure that that information is consistent so that accounting can be consistent.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Interestingly, when you were talking about the measurement, valuation, and ethics, and of course, there's another initiative going on now that is sort of a sister movement to this, if you will, on ethics at the international level, and we may or may not have time to talk about that at all, but I'm aware of it because I've become more involved just because of my position here with what's happening there. But when I put out the notice about you being on the show in our newsletter, I included some of the information you provided, and one of the things that was in there was a quote, so to speak, or not a quote, but actually information from the Jones Lang LaSalle group that said something about, depending on the method used, the property's floor area can deviate as much as 24%. And one of our members wrote back and said it sounded to him like that what was happening in the standard was talking more about the what we measure, not the way we measure, and what the way he focused that was in his particular state. There's a minimum statute that says your precision of your measurement has to meet a certain criteria. And when then he said that's a far cry from the 24%, but I don't think that's really what you were talking about or what talking about. So maybe you could just expound on that a little bit.
Sure. So focusing this down to the measurement of property, absolutely. And it's interesting, your listener makes a good point, and I'm sure that is the relevant point, the accuracy is the relevant point in the work he does. The 24% from Joan Lane's LaSalle is not that. It is the reality that currently, within countries, but definitely between different countries and markets, the same property, the exact same space, measured by good quality professionals, can deviate by 24%, not because of accuracy and not even because of ethics. It's because they're using a different standard. And what I mean by that is one standard might say measure from the inside of the wall to the inside of the wall. Another standard might say measure from the outside of the wall to the outside of the wall. One standard might say include the elevator shaft space or the common area or only measure to 1.4 meters of usable space and height or measure to the ceiling or even things like the definition of where exactly the ceiling is. I mean, I'm in a room right now, I'm looking up and there are beams across the ceiling. I'm looking up in the room and it's not really clear where the ceiling is. Equally with the walls where the room I am right now, the walls have these columns. Well, the recessed area, is that where you measure from or is it from the column? Or even do you include columns? So if you have a column in the middle of your space, do you subtract that from the floor area or do you include it? So the point is that by using different standards, space can deviate greatly. One true example that came to my attention recently is a very extreme example, and it's 1140 Avenue of the Americas in New York City. And that specific property was traded in 1990 and again in 2011. And between that time, physically, there was no construction. The building didn't change in physical size or space. But on paper, it grew by 41%. Now, in that case, maybe some questionable ethics were involved. But what happens is somebody can come into that and say, well, we'll measure the space, but instead of just the space this tenant might be using for desks, we'll include these common areas and we'll include the foyer and et cetera. Or maybe we'll extend the usable space out to the nose of the gargoyle hanging off the side of the building. So what we're doing with this project is trying to standardize all of that. The laws of physics and gravity don't deviate around the world. They're all the same. And so just the basic facts of the size of a building should not deviate. And we need to put together a set of standards that people can follow to ensure that consistency is properly recorded.
And so this really has more to do with the physical properties on land than the land itself. Is that correct?
So far, yes. However, as a coalition, we have, in the scope, we've talked about standards involving land in the future. And so what we've done now in sort of the first year is focus on offices, so commercial property. Next is residential, then retail, and then other commercial, other commercial and mixed use space, and then land. And I think you know, the obvious point, as you just stated, is that all this property is sitting on land, and it's really interesting. And I'm sure your listeners are real experts in this, and these are the kind of people we need to reach out to. But there's been a diversity of thoughts about that, where a lot of professionals have said that this standardization of measurement of land is vital and that it's not consistent. We've had others say that, well, land is very simple. It is consistent. And so that is an area we want to explore and make sure we get right.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, actually, when you begin to look at it in a more complex perspective. You know, we, as property surveyors, so to speak, obviously what's on the land is demonstrated on the surveyor's plat, as well as the dimensions of the property and the acreage of the property and what have you. But you're right, and it goes back to my listener's point, too, is, okay, what's really included in that, and how do you measure it? And I guess maybe as close as we get sometimes to the kind of things you're talking about are in measuring condominiums. You know, condominiums are measured because you're going from the inside of the wall studs to the inside of the wall studs rather than inside the drywall, so to speak. And so it's maybe a small example of something that is illustrative of the differences in how people measure, I suppose.
Right. Well, and all those little examples add up. And it's very interesting about this project is that a lot of people, real professionals within our profession, didn't know about this. And even more so when it comes to our customers and sort of the layman. People, very smart people, have said to us, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know that there was this inconsistency. And so when you say that this property is 60 square feet or 60 square meters as opposed to 65, that does make a difference. And so for example, just even in the United States, I know that if you look at residential apartments in Washington, D.C., in some parts of the city, they include the outdoor decking in the square feet measurement.
I hate to interrupt you, but we got to go to our first break.
Okay.
This is a good point to come back, and we'll talk about D.C. when we come back from the first break. So let's go do that, and we'll be right back.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com, and thank you.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
And we're back with our guest today, Ken Creighton, with Ricks. We're talking about an initiative that has begun fairly recently for international property measurement standards, and a coalition has been established. And you were talking about the measurement side, Ken, as we left. So I want to follow up on that, and then we can get into talking about who all is involved in this later on. But
great.
You were just beginning to talk about the differences in the size of something.
Yes, yeah. Really defining the problem that this coalition exists to solve. And just some anecdotal examples. We were in Washington, D.C., and a professional was telling us about how in different parts of that city, residential properties, the square footage would be, some parts of the city they would include the outside decking space, and some parts they would not. But for a family looking to rent a property in that city, it's information that you would expect would be consistent and comparable. Another person was telling me about in some parts in Florida, they record the space as the volume of space air conditioned. So if you have a 1,000 square foot property in some parts of Florida, what they're talking about is the amount of the volume of space that's air conditioned. Which makes sense in that market, I guess. If you're interested in living there, you'll want to know how much air conditioning you have. But you can see how that can just wildly vary to other markets. And then when you go international, the differences can really be extreme. And that really is a problem when we're talking about an international marketplace.
Well, I can see that in particular in selling or rental. I mean, if you were just talking about the D.C. example, if somebody's renting a property by square footage rather than just a space, then obviously that's going to make a lot of difference if they're paying a certain amount per
right.
square foot.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
It was recently I was talking to the facilities manager of Vodafone, the person in charge of all their facilities around the world. They had a recent real example where they were moving or opening an office in New Delhi, India, and they knew exactly how many square meters they needed per employee. And I think they wanted to have 50 employees in this workspace. And when as this was a new build, and as they were proceeding and getting ready to move in, they noticed that they really only had space for 30 employees. And the discrepancy was exactly this problem. It was, that space includes the toilets, and it includes the lift space, and it includes these little alcove workspaces and so forth. And so there was a discrepancy in the standard and how you measure that space. And that deal fell through. That deal fell through because of this. I should also note, and sometimes this is confusing, is we're not talking about units. We're not trying to get the French to use feet and, the Americans to use meters. I mean, that's not part of this. This problem exists if you're working in the Japanese language or the Portuguese language, and this problem exists whether, no matter what unit you're using. This is about how you apply that measurement.
Yeah, that's an interesting part of the discussion, because as you're well aware, I'm sure we've made a number of attempts here in the U.S. to become more user-friendly with using metrics or metric system rather than our own units. And actually, there have been laws passed in various states that have required that. I remember years ago developing plans for departments of transportation who were transferring over to metric units, and we actually ended up doing two sets of plans. One to meet their criteria for approval, and the other so somebody could build it, because the builders didn't understand the metric units. It's very, very interesting process of trying to become standardized, if that's the right word. And I guess, as you pointed out, that's not likely to ever happen. So
yeah,
you're not
yeah.
even beginning, not even approaching that.
I personally, I don't think that's a real problem. I mean, you can do some simple mathematics and figure out the equivalent square meters or square feet.
Sure.
The problem is if you have two buildings and you say they're both 200 square feet and they're not the same size, that's mm-hmm. a problem.
Sure. Yep. Makes perfect sense. And so, again, as we were going through the discussion, we were talking about buildings and not so much the ground itself. if I'm understanding this correctly. I mean, obviously, you want it to be uniform. You want it to be talking about the same kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of if you're marking a property boundary, that property boundary is whatever it is, right? It's not subject to interpretation about whether it's 1 acre or 2 acres, because it measures whatever it is. So is that somehow part of the equation at all?
Right. So what we've done so far is focus on offices. And so, the first version of IPMS is solely focused on three aspects of office measurement: gross external area, gross internal area, and net internal area. And so within the standard, and I think we'll get to this in a moment, but your listeners can actually view the consultation draft we have out, so they can actually read this in detail, and we would love for them to give feedback, because that is the stage of the project we are right now. But so it's solely focusing on that. We haven't gotten into the land it sits on yet. We're taking this first step.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense too, and understanding, of course, that there are different mechanisms for measuring land in different parts of the world, and
right.
I don't know where we stand on the hierarchy of that in terms of how evolved we are in terms of how we define property boundaries, because we seem to continue to have differences of opinion about where property corners fall.
Right.
And you may have heard of our what we call the pincushion effect dilemma, where somehow we've allowed the precision of our instruments to have more influence over where we determine a property boundary is than the evidence that we're supposed to be using.
That's an interesting concept, and we've had a few people say to us, well, why is this necessary at all? We have building information management. We have these precision laser instruments. You know, how is it possible that we have this inconsistency? And the point is not about if you have something like a wonderful instrument that could measure extreme tolerances, that's wonderful. But when it comes to reporting exactly what the, in this case, let's say, net internal area is, what number do you pull? So you might have all the information in the world, but if you want to tell a client or a government or a regulator or a developer the size of the property, well, again, do you measure from the outside of the wall or the inside of the wall? You have all that information, but what do you tell as net internal area, for example? And so all of this modern technology gives us incredible amount of information and data, but it's the application and the consistent application which is the issue.
In terms of the standards, you were talking about this being an international exercise, and the latest information I had was that there's about 44 organizations that are involved at this point. Maybe that's expanded since I got the last information. But do you have a grasp at all of how many entities we're talking about that need to be involved in this so that we have some uniformity?
Oh, that's such a good question. The honest answer is no. Interestingly, our numbers are about to officially be over 50 now, as far as the organizations like NSPS and RICS who are in this coalition. And I mean, personally, I think it's a pretty big number. I mean, we have, I guess now, three in Japan and two in China, and you know, Brazil, India, all over Europe and Southeast Asia, and it's a you know, we could go through this in detail, but your listeners, I think, would be very impressed with how truly diverse and international this coalition is. And we started out, this is the work much of 2012, where we were reaching out to the organizations we knew of and saying, hey, you know, how about this problem? And we understand you have standards and we have standards. And instead of trying to sort of beat each other up or sort of compete about which standard would be used internationally, why don't we work together and create a shared standard that we can all benefit from? And people agreed to that, and that's how this got started. But the effort to contact these organizations we've contacted everyone we know of. In RICS, we're a pretty big international organization now. We have 800 full-time staff members and 27 offices around the world. We have members in 140 countries. We have 4 offices in China and offices in Brazil and India and all over the world. And it was a pretty good effort to contact over 30 organizations that we knew of that had standards like this. But now, as this has grown, we're over 50 now. So it's really. But to answer your question, I don't know. I'm sure that new organizations will be popping up regularly. I hope so.
Yeah, I believe I just saw in one of the emails in the last few days. I think it was there were 3 organizations from Cyprus, I believe.
Yes, yeah, that's exactly right. In Cyprus, absolutely, the Cyprus architects and the engineers, and so there's been a lot of talk about this project in that country, so we have a second Canadian organization joining. We have I have to count them up, but I think we have 8 or 10 different American organizations in this coalition. Probably an equal amount in Europe, or actually probably I think more than that in Europe actually. So it's been very international. I think that's the right word.
Absolutely, and that number that you mentioned for the U.S. organizations might be surprising to our particular audience, because most of our people in our audience are surveyors like me. But as our discussion has progressed, I think it's easy to see where there's a much broader interest here than simply from our perspective. I mean, the people who are going to be utilizing this data go way beyond, and I know we got about a minute before we go to our next break, so I don't know how much we want to get into that part of it, but that is interesting to know that there are that many from the U.S.
Sure.
that are involved.
Yeah. Well, a lot of the other organizations are very different than NSPS in the sense that they might be appraisal-focused or investment-focused, property data-focused, and even within the United States, there's a diversity of organizations in each of those focuses, if I can use that word.
Sure, yeah. And again, that kind of gets down to our user base. The people that we perform services for, a lot of these people you're talking about, or at least they use the services that we provide as part of their process in buying, selling, or evaluating, or whatever they do. And maybe when we come back from the break, we can talk a little bit about this. Begins to sound like almost like an FIG kind of thing. So let's go to that break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of 2 instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on 2 locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
Quick stakes are not just an affordable alternative to heavy wooden stakes, but they save the surveyor time, which means money, by being easy to carry, easy to ride on, and even easier to see. For more information about quick stakes, go to www.quickstake.com, or for a sample, give us a call at 800-438-0387.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Schonstedt, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're We're back today with Ken Creighton talking about international measurement standards. And we're at the time of our show, Ken, where our Parker Davis Quick Stakes sponsors a competition and our contest. The first person who correctly emails to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com, the answer to the question I'm going to ask you, will be our winner for today. And early on in the discussion of RICS, you were talking about when RICS was established and by whom. So I guess the question is, who was responsible for the creation of RICS? And you just tell me the answer, and then they'll...
Do I tell the answer?
Yeah, you tell the answer. Yeah, give me the answer.
The original Royal Charter was signed by Queen Victoria.
That's the answer we're looking for, Queen Victoria. And actually, when you mentioned Queen Victoria and you mentioned chartered surveyors, it reminded me of some discussion that we have here in the U.S. about who are our original surveyors. We talk about Washington and Lincoln and Jefferson and some of our presidents who were surveyors, and we're really proud of that, and we have those guys on Mount Rushmore. But being a Virginian, of course, I'm interested in what happened here in the very early part of the colonization of the country, and there are lots of records here about Captain John Smith surveying and the fact that he was a chartered surveyor.
Interesting.
So I always found that to be very, very interesting that he had come here. And so whether we're right or wrong, we Virginians claim that we still have the earliest surveyor as part of our population.
Right.
And nobody's been able to disprove it yet, so I we'll just keep claiming that. Unless somebody tells us differently.
I'll back you up on that.
Yeah, that'd be great. But we were talking about the countries that are involved and the various groups that are involved and how the coalition is coming together, and maybe we could talk about that a little bit and how you see that coming together of all the organizations and how that's going to work. I'm sure people are interested in how you're going to manage something like that, I guess.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a few aspects of that. One is the market reality, and the other is the politics, if you will, the relationships. So on the market reality, I think the situation we're all dealing with is that we have an international marketplace, and we're all a part of it. So, for example, if you were to get a map of the world, I would challenge you to find a place called international. It doesn't exist. You know, there's no section of our planet that is international and the rest are just local markets. That's not the way it works. International is, you know, national markets intertwined. And that's what we're dealing with. So we have this international marketplace, but we have local standards. And that's a problem. So that as our international marketplace is working, we have all these inconsistent standards that are being reported and compared, and you know, and it's a problem, as your professional listeners are well aware. And so I think that everybody recognizes that. I think everybody knows that their clients, although they might be based down the street, if you follow the money, it's connected to this global economy, and we have to work in a way that economy can function as well as we expect. Then it comes down to politics. I remember, if I can just give a quick anecdote of my previous job working with International Financial Reporting Standards, I was talking to the national chairman of a country's accounting standards board about their adoption of international accounting standards. And they were really struggling with it, and their government, their actual national regulator, had deemed that this would happen. And the person, the chairman that I was speaking with, was not very happy about it. And what it came down to was the person said to me, "What's going to happen to my job?" And it was a fascinating moment for me to realize how it's like what Tip O'Neill once said: "All politics is local." When it comes down to, well, what am I going to do? Then you're getting to the real issues that lead people's thinking. And so with a project like this, it can sound wonderful, and we can naively think, well, it's the right thing to do, so let's just do it, and everything's fine. But it comes down to the politics. So, for example, you know, I have a responsibility for standards at RICS, and we're replacing our standards with IPMS. So we've had the code of measuring practice for a very long time, and we've already made the decision that whatever IPMS says, that will be our standard. And that's part of the psychology of this. So what we've done to address this and make this possible is we've done it differently. We haven't gone to a lot of your listeners would be familiar with ISO or these other standards organizations. We haven't outsourced this. What we've done is we've set up a model where all of these coalition members that we're talking about, these over 50 members, legally and in perception own the standards. So these standards are 1/50th NSPS, and they're 1/50th RICS, and 1/50th all the rest, you know, all the other organizations. So we own them. They're ours. And I think that's an important point, not just as far as intellectual property or copyright. It's important as far as the message to our membership is that, yes, we're going to adopt these international standards, but we're not kowtowing to this international organization. We are that organization. We're not throwing away our good standards and taking somebody else's. The international standards are ours. And that's an important psychological point to deal with the politics of change. So we've invited all these organizations to own and be part of the project. And we can talk in detail about the governance, but we've set up a governance structure that really enables that to ensure that we have a good spirit to this and that it functions, yet we have this shared ownership.
Do you anticipate, and I can see this question coming from our listenership already, how do you anticipate, I shouldn't say do you anticipate, but how do you anticipate dealing with issues where there are specific standards established by, in our country, for example, every state has a set of standards for surveying, for mm-hmm. the practice of surveying. Maybe not exactly what we're talking about here, but in
sure.
terms of how you express things. But I can see that question coming now, is because
yeah.
we don't even have uniform standards. Exactly standard. They're very, very similar, but they're not exactly the same across the country for how you perform an actual property survey. So I guess there is an anticipation that you're going to have these issues to come up during the process.
Absolutely. And there are a few answers to that. But it's a good question, and you're right. That's kind of where the rubber hits the road. One answer is that we mentioned that there were, I think, 8 or more organizations in the U.S. that are part of this coalition. One of them, for example, is BOMA, the Building Owners and Managers Association, and they've been brilliant. I'm the chairman of the coalition. Lisa Pratz is a vice president at BOMA. She's the vice chair. And BOMA, as I understand it, is not federal statute in the United States, but in practice, BOMA standards are really, if not the leading, one of the leading standards in that market. In many markets around the world, by the way, I think BOMA standards are used in...
Okay. Ken, are you still with me?
I am.
Okay. I'm not really sure how long we were out, so I'm not sure how much of the conversation was missed, but we were talking about the various entities from different countries that are involved in creating the standard and realizing that there are already standards in place in lots of different places, and you're trying to create something that everybody agrees on for a particular set of circumstances, and I had likened that to our ALT-ACSM standards on the property boundary side. And it sounds to me like that's similar to what we're saying.
It is. I think there's a few ways to address this question about how do we implement new standards when standards currently exist. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners are thinking about situations when current standards are legally required. So how do you deal with that? And I think so there's a few, like the example you just gave, there is entities like RICS that cover a lot of the world and BOMA, where as we adopt it, our members follow those standards, and that's one answer to how we do it. Another answer is that we seek governments to adopt these international standards for all the market reasons we just articulated. So, for example, the government of Dubai has already adopted IPMS as law. And other governments are looking at doing the same, taking legal action. Also, there's another aspect to this. And in my other work, I've mentioned financial reporting standards. I also do work in valuation standards. And measurement of these physical things, you know, property, for example, in some ways is easier than things like financial reporting and valuation, and that you can report two numbers. So the way I've addressed this in some situations is that if you have a client who might say, I would like you to measure that office building based on international property measurement standards because I need to compare it to another property in Shanghai. So give me the IPMS number. Great, you provide that number. But in Shanghai or in California, there might be a statute where the local government says, well, we need it by this standard because we tax it by this standard or insurance or whatever it is.
We're right at break time, Ken. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Let's do that. And this is a great thing to come back and talk about.
Okay, great.
I'm not sure how long we were off the air there.
Well, I think the beep happened when I was talking about BOMA, so I think we went back and covered it.
Right, good. Yeah, because I heard the beep. I just didn't know what it was. So you are getting close to end of the day, aren't you?
Yeah, it's quarter to five my time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Are you? So do we have one more 13-minute segment?
We
is that
do.
Right?
We
okay.
Do.
Right. Yeah, it does go fast, doesn't it?
It goes really fast. That's oftentimes why I ask people sometimes to come back because I'll get questions from our audience, and so we may want to do that at some point if you're available.
Well, of course, I'd be happy to.
If nothing else, as the process continues, we can give reports.
Yeah. You know, another thing, it would be great if you could post a link to this on the community site for the other coalition members.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mike Karuchak. Join me and my co-host, Dr. Hal Schertz, every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. and listen to the Doctor's Lounge, where you get a private insight into the conversations that doctors have amongst themselves. Join us Thursday, 8 a.m. every week.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at Schonstedt.com. That's Schonstedt.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back for our last and shortened session, our segment today. We only have 11 minutes this time, Ken, but I apologize that we had our little blip there. But before we went to break, you were talking about this whole idea of two versions, so to speak, which is not necessarily unheard of. I mean, I see that happen from time to time. Maybe you want to talk about that a bit further.
Right. So it's possible to take, in this case, a building, one building, and you could measure it according to BOMA standards and RICS standards and maybe another standard, and clearly say to the client that here are three different numbers based on three different standards, and be consistent. So, for example, I'll give you a true example of this. When I, in my previous job with, I've mentioned IFRS, we were dealing with Mexico, and Mexico was decided to adopt IFRS. They were moving from Mexican GAAP, the accounting standards. And the regulator imposed I international standards on the standards that are in Mexico. And what they decided to do to implement this is in year one, all of the companies, when they put in their financial reports to be on the stock exchange, they would report their accounts based on international financial reporting standards and on Mexican GAAP. And so major international companies were reporting two different profits. And that was very interesting. It worked in the sense that all of the investors and other stakeholders in the country, they were familiar with the Mexican GAAP numbers, and they had their number to compare. And then for the regulatory requirement and international consistency, there was the international standard, and it works. The same accountant signing off two different numbers based on two different standards. What we found is that by year two, or definitely year three, people only wanted the international number. But you can see how, and I'm not saying that that would be the case everywhere in the world with measurement standards, but you can see how, in the same way that you could take a property and you could measure it according to feet or meters, you could measure it to this standard or that standard, and as long as you're totally clear and transparent about what you're doing, there's no problem with that. So in this case, I would think a lot of professionals could see IPMS as an added benefit to their clients to say, okay, here's the number you are familiar with, here's another number that you can use in other situations.
So it gives some diversification for the use of the information, yeah, at that point, right?
According to what your client or the market needs. Because this problem is real and the market that we're all in is international, we think that IPMS will be needed, and it is an added benefit. I mean, obviously I'm an advocate of IPMS, but we're not sort of afraid of, we're not trying to take over local standards. We're trying to address a real problem. And so, our members that we regulate, RICS members, if they have a local client, whether it's an entity or a government that says we want you to measure property based on some other standard, they can do that. They just need to declare what it is, that it's not IPMS, and they can report that number. So as long as you're clear and transparent about what you're doing, that's fine.
With the growing list of participants in the coalition, have you thought about projecting how far away we are from getting something pulled together?
Well, sure. There's a couple aspects of that. There's the actual production of the standards themselves, and then there's the governance of the coalition. So with IPMS for offices, we expect to have a final standard on the 14th of November of this year, so just a few months from now. So I can explain briefly where we are in that process. The standard setting committee, I should note, as part of our governance, we set up an independent standard setting committee. So part of what we agreed as a coalition initially is that we would separate the technical writing of these standards from the, if you will, the politics of the organizations and the governance. We weren't going to create a patchwork of different standards or have an argument about, you know, use my standards, not theirs, that type of thing. So we set up a committee of experts from all over the world to work independently to have the responsibility of setting the standards. But, and they do so openly and through open public consultation. So throughout 2013, they worked on IPMS for offices. And on the 13th of January of this year, 2014, they released a consultation draft. And that draft was open for public consultation until the 4th of April. And then after the 4th of April, they took all that feedback, which was voluminous, a really successful consultation, very international, and they created a next version, which was ready in June. And we decided to release that as an exposure draft, which was released in early July, just a few weeks ago. It's currently being exposed, and that exposure period will end on the 15th of September, just a few weeks from today. And then we expect them to take on all that feedback and have a final standard on the 14th of November. And I should state for the listeners that the website where you can see all this information about the project and also this exposure draft of IPMS for offices is IPMSC.org. So that's International Property Measurement Standards Coalition.org. And if you go to that website, www.ipmsc.org, you'll see all this information.
And I know that the European CLGE has been involved in this, and I got something from them, I don't know, a while back on building measurement standards. Is that part of this whole process as well, or is that a whole different thing?
I'm not sure, actually. CLGE has been absolute leader in this project, and they have a lot of standards. And so, you know, they also work in various European languages. So this might have been lost in translation, but I'm not going to assume that what they're referring to was IPMS, but it probably was. Yannis Pirlo is their president.
Right, I know him. Great guy, by the way.
He's been a real leader, and he's actually the general secretary of this effort. So I mentioned Lisa Pratt of BOMA. The three of us are the officers of this coalition, trustees. We were elected to be the officers. And CLGE actually donated the intellectual property of their standard, which had been adopted by the European Commission, to be the basis of IPMS. And so we actually had that as a kickstart to this whole project.
And that's the document I'm talking about, I think.
Okay. So it is the same thing, yes.
Yeah,
absolutely. And so that document, it's called the Euro Real Standards, were donated to the coalition. We had a signing ceremony and something. And so they've been very really at the vanguard of this and very generous, frankly, in time and energy. So in Europe, although it's just one sort of continent and legal entity or collection of legal entities, they really know the problem. You know, you bring all these European countries together and they deal with this problem in Europe. And so when we're talking about the international inconsistency, they know what we're talking about. And what CLGE had done is really amazing work to bring consistency to Europe. And so, but what's impressive is that they've made the commitment to working with all of us around the world to do the same thing internationally.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about how their system works, even on the surveying side in terms of what we call licensure here in the U.S. But as I think I mentioned earlier, to practice in each of our states, you have to have a license in that state. We don't have a national license for surveying. And that creates its own issues. I'm sure that happens in Europe and the rest of the world also when you have local jurisdictions who control those licensing.
Sure, absolutely.
So trying to find some sort of common ground seems to make a lot of sense where you're able to do that. And I think one of the important things you've mentioned today, and I say we only have a couple of minutes left, but one of the important things you mentioned today is that you're not really out to say this is the standard and what you've got doesn't matter anymore. You're trying to work with all of the ones that exist today.
Oh, that's absolutely right. I couldn't stress that more. And even to take that a step further, this whole project, I think, is addressing a real problem that we all have to some extent or other. And so we would want people to benefit from this and to be a part of it. So whether you are part of an organization that for some reason isn't yet part of this coalition, we'd welcome you to join. Or if you're a professional who has expertise in this work and could please read the exposure draft, and there's a form on the website where you can type in your feedback and so forth, if you could please do that, that would be very welcome. And these standards will be freely available on the website I mentioned, www.ipmsc.org, for anyone to use. So we hope that you use it and realize the benefit of it.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, because that's really one of the reasons I wanted to do the show today, was to expose our audience to what's happening and to try to get them involved, get them to be part of the process. I think that's important, and we want them to have a voice. So the radio show is a good way for us to do that because of the way it's distributed. So we've got a half a minute left. So before we get off, I want to make sure that I thank you for being with me today. It's been an absolutely fabulous conversation, and taking the time out of your day to be a part of it.
No, it's absolutely my pleasure. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And hopefully sometime in the not-too-distant future, we can come back and have a discussion about where things stand. So thanks again for being with me.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, and goodbye. Hope to talk to you soon.
Okay, goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
This is America'sWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.